that, we've got company.
Hello.
Trust me, Hera, I'm excited. This is my excited face.
Oh, this makes me so happy.
I like you. You don't fit in around here either.
All right, if I tag along?
More the merrier.
Get ready to be impressed.
You ready to be impressed, Tam?
I'm completely ready.
Bright suns, everyone. You're listening to the Geeky Bubble podcast, where we talk about the Star Wars animated shows from the comfort of our own geeky bubble. I am your host, Jenna Marie, and with me is the Sid to my Omega, my mom, Maria.
Yeah, I'm like Sid.
Yeah.
Today, we're going to discuss the Bad Batch episode, Infested.
Yes. So Infested was written by Amanda Rose Munoz and directed by Saul Ruiz. So this episode felt a lot like a Rebels episode, Star Wars Rebels episode.
Yeah.
Where they, you know, get into some sort of trouble. And it was fun. It was a fun one before all the stuff hits the fan in a couple of weeks, you know?
Yeah. I'm afraid of what's gonna look like.
Yeah, next week. Same. I'm also scared. Mainly because we didn't see Crosshair in this episode. I was hoping that he would at least show up for like a few seconds to find out that they are on Ord Mantell. Mm-hmm. And then that's where he's headed. But no, that didn't happen. And so I'm worried that he's going to die by the end of the season without having gotten a lot of screen time. So here's hoping that doesn't happen and that it carries over to the next season, because I feel like it needs to be fleshed out more on his part. So we'll see.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And so let's start off with the fact that the Bad Batch and Sid, you know, they don't have the warmest of relationships. And I love when Tech and Echo question the activity that was going on. But Hunter's like, not our problem.
Yeah.
It just reinforces how he really wants to remain detached from everything.
And I think that that's part of his struggle, realizing that I cannot always be detached.
Exactly.
So, yeah. But I just love that love-hate relationship that they have.
Yes.
Because it is funny. It just makes for everything.
It really does. Yeah, I do love their bickering.
And I just love how he does not call them by name.
She doesn't. And that's the thing. In this episode, we get her calling Wrecker Big Guy and Muscles.
Yeah.
But we still don't have a name for Echo.
Yeah. Like, I don't think she's directed conversation a lot towards Echo.
No.
It's always Goggles or
Dark and Broody. Right. Oh, that's so funny. So Hunter and the Bad Batch were pretty much just ready to leave Sid behind. They didn't care what had happened or whether she was alive or not. So do you think them wanting to leave makes them heartless, or is this just business? Or is business just heartless?
No, I think it's just also a result of the way Sid treats them.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, Sid does not treat them well.
No.
She just treats them like a commodity.
Yeah.
They're a tool. They bring me money. That's it. That's all there is.
Yeah.
So, you know, you cannot expect more if you don't give anything.
Yeah. But Omega standing up for Sid and saying how they just can't walk away, she really is the moral compass in the group. And it's funny to think about how they didn't really have that before. When you look back at the Bad Batch arc, or before Omega came into the picture, they just followed directions, instructions, carried out what they had to do, and that was it. Like, they didn't really have someone with a conscience there to really guide them.
Well, they didn't need it, because this is the thing. Before, when they were on their own, they were receiving orders from the Jedi. They're the ones who were controlling the whole war and strategy. So that was the conscience right there.
Right.
So they were doing the right thing because they were being ordered to do the right thing. At least the right thing as far as the Jedi thought they were doing the right thing. You know? Now, after the Jedi is gone and the Empire come to rule and them not being with the Empire and willing to do what the Empire wants, then now they do need that moral compass because now they don't receive orders. They don't know what, they may have an idea what the right thing or the wrong thing it is, but in the moment of heat, in the moment of battle, in the moment of decision, they don't. They just go for self-preservation.
Right.
Which is what we see here.
Yeah. They didn't really need it before. And so I'm glad that they have it now through Omega. And it just, I love how it comes so naturally from Omega too. Because that's her natural instinct to see something when something's wrong. And she's the one who forms relationships with people. And she's the one who brings out of the Bad Batch the good things that they can do.
You know, one of the things that I've wondered through the whole show is that we do know that the clones are capable of compassion and love and, you know, but those are the instances where they're being the dots out of the line. You know what I'm saying? The line is straight and then those few dots here and there that come out of that line. Omega is not like that. So I'm wondering, did the Kaminoans actually put that in there? You know, like, wait, and what was the purpose of them putting something in there that...
Like teaching her right from wrong?
Yeah, that could potentially turn against them.
Yeah, because
one day or another.
With the clones, it came with experience. It came from being out there. That's how they developed it. It's not something that they were instilled with when they were on Kamino. Whereas Omega is still young, having been on Kamino her whole life. So she does have a really good understanding of good and bad. And then the gray in between. And it's interesting to think about, like, how did she come by this... And sometimes that's just innate. Like, you know, you as a person tend to, at that age, for sure, you can pick up on those differences. But yeah, it does make you wonder.
Like, because they're controlling. The Kaminoans control everything.
Right.
So I wonder, like, did they see it? Is there a purpose? What were they thinking?
Right. You know? And I feel like that's all Nala say.
Yeah.
And again, it sucks that we haven't gotten more of her.
Yeah.
More of what the Kaminoans are doing behind the scenes. Because it's just very intriguing, this idea that Nala Se gave Omega everything that she needed to be who she is as we see her in this episode. And if we just haven't seen her at all. I'm like, where is she?
They're the puppet masters, you know?
Right.
And here they created a puppet that doesn't need strings.
Right.
Like, what was the purpose? What was the reasoning behind it?
Yeah. You know? Now I have that Pinocchio song stuck in my head. And I also have the Ultron version of it stuck in my head now. And I really love when when they see Cid in their ship and Cid's talking. I love when Hunter says, "We."
Yeah.
And he's like pointing between him, him and the group and Cid. And I really love that minor animation between him and Cid.
Yeah, because it's like, you
it
know.
It was just so good. Like a great character detail.
You even charges for the food we eat. You charge us for everything and somehow we're in this together.
Right. I love it. Someone had posted a video, a short clip of it on Twitter, and I kept watching it over and over because it's such a subtle, the way that they captured that was such a great interaction from Hunter's part. So let's talk about Roland. So Roland is a former client of Cid's. He's the one who paid Cid to retrieve Ruby in that episode Battle Scars, which starts off with them stealing it from someone else. And I wish we had gotten the name of the species because it's so freaking adorable. And we know that Roland is also the son of the crime boss, Issa Durand. So that's new. I don't think we've heard that name before. I think I gave it a quick look on Wikipedia and she didn't have like a big Wikipedia entry. So hearing that, it reminded me a lot of, remember in Star Trek Discovery Season 3, the Orion, yeah, who was pretty much in control of her own chain of capitalistic syndicates or something like that. Osyra. Yeah, and I just like, she had a nephew who was working for her, and the nephew was responsible for a few things somewhere, and the nephew messed up big time. Yeah. But yes, that relationship reminds me of Roland and Issa Durand. And hopefully Issa Durand isn't that kind of person that I'm thinking, where she is rough and tough and could kill you.
Well, the difference being that Osyra was the aunt. Yes. Here, Issa is the mother.
Yeah.
So maybe he doesn't die.
Yeah, here's hoping. Because Roland really came out to be someone who was very sophisticated. And he was obviously trying to make a name for himself. But at the same time, I got the feeling that he's doing this stuff because it's expected of him. Yes. And not because he wants to.
He had that that tone and that cadence in his way.
Right.
That points out to a person who still has a remnant of a conscience. Mm-hmm. He still knows exactly what good and bad is. He just likes to walk on the gray areas. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I was thinking we're getting from this episode is the fact that he's a new ally.
Yes, he could potentially be a new ally.
Because of the fact that he is not the true crime boss.
Right.
But he's not an angel without nothing either, you know?
And I would say an ally to Omega.
Uh-huh, because
the Bad Batch did screw up his whole plan there. But Omega seemed to have healed some wounds.
She obviously caused an impression.
Yes.
Because he says something that she then repeats in the end, which is Ruby doesn't just take to anybody.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I always say a person who is compassionate, who has love for an animal, regardless of their behavior, they tend to have some redeeming qualities. Ah. You know what I'm saying? Because if you're good to an animal, then you are capable of being good to a human being.
I don't know, mommy.
Whether you choose to be it or not, that's different.
I see.
But you have the capability.
I was going to say, because Dr. Evil has Mr. Wigglesworth.
But again, you choose.
I see.
When I believe the opposite, the opposite is true when you are cruel to animals.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah.
If you are good to humans, it's just because it's a means to an end.
Right. Yeah. And just to clarify, Dr. Evil's from Austin Powers. Just in case that reference went over anyone's head. But yes, I do love how Roland kept Ruby's name. And I feel like they did that just so that we had an understanding that that was the same creature that Omega had named earlier in the season. But I just, like, from an in-universe perspective, I really do love that Roland kept the name Ruby that she came up with for the creature.
Or maybe it's something that if the creature is imprinted with the name.
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
You know, it could be something like that, where if once you hear a name, that's imprinted in the creature, therefore that is the name that it takes.
Yeah, that's possibly it. But it's such a cute little Ruby. Oh my gosh.
To me, it's supposed to look like an armadillo.
Yeah, it's like an armadillo-like creature. And there's another animal on Earth that I can't seem to remember the name for right now. But yes, it's very similar to that. And I do also love the armor that Roland's guards were wearing. Like, that was very interesting. And I hope the episode guide that comes out for this episode has some information about that, because that seemed really, it felt video game-like to me.
Yeah, it did.
Or like something that they would have used in another property, like in another title that they had come up with for either a video game or one of the movies that it went unused and it decided to use it for this instance here. So here's hoping we find out. And going back to Roland and Omega, like, I love how he said that the word criminal sounded undignified. And I really love the conversation between him and her, and where he says that the, you know, the Durand way is that you take what you want. But he didn't seem to be like
all 100% on it,
right?
You know,
right.
It's sort of like, that's what my mom said, so that's what I have to do.
Exactly.
But not necessarily what I would like to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. He's a very interesting character.
Yeah,
and I really hope we get more of him. Like, even my best friend and I were talking about him, and I was like, man, I really want to know where he goes from here. Like, if he goes back to his mom with his horn cut off.
Like,
he looked ashamed at the end. And I'm wondering whether it was shame because of what happened, or whether he was ashamed to face his mom and then possibly, you know, have his mom reprimand him for what happened.
Yeah, and he's such a stark contrast from the other character of his species that we know.
From Rebels?
Yeah.
Secatro Bazago?
They're so different.
Yes.
In the way they carry themselves and how they speak and talk and do things, you know?
And that was one thing that was funny, seeing people saying, oh my gosh, is this Secatro Bazago? But that thought briefly came into my mind because of the one horn, but Secatro's horn was removed on the left side, not on the right. So they're two different people. But it is interesting that he came up when Roland appeared. And I thought, oh man, I miss Secatro Bazago. I miss his accent. And my favorite Secatro line was when, I think it was the Brothers of the Broken Horn, when Ezra and Chopper have to help Hondo, and Secatro puts them in an escape pod, and then he hits the button and he says, I hate children. I hate children. Oh, Secatro. But anyway, I really do love that Bolo and Ketch were featured in this episode.
They're the oddest couple.
They really are. And I love how they were in the Bad Batch's ship initially. Like, they were there playing cards, I think, or some game.
I don't know, but I think Sid needs to get herself some new help.
Right.
Because these two, you cannot rely on them. They did turn against her like it was nothing.
Well, I mean, they couldn't help it. They had been captured. They don't say at least something that, you know, they don't know. And they were telling the truth. They didn't know.
Yura Marie, they went like, it was all her plan.
That's true.
There's no need for that. You know what I'm saying?
That's true. They were desperate. They were scared. They were nervous.
Not the best of health for a crime boss.
Yeah, no. I am glad that Bolo and Ketch weren't harmed. And I think that also speaks to Roland's character, where he just said, just take them away, and didn't like behead them or shoot them in that moment, because that would have been really dark. And prior to that, when they were luring Ruby away with those, you know, the mental mix treats, I really love how Ruby was running. I just thought that was super adorable. And then when Ruby turns around on her tummy so that Roland can scratch it, I want one. I want my own Ruby. And what was even funnier, though, was when, you know how Roland picks her up and pretty much carries her like a baby. So he goes into his office and then sees that the crates of the spice are gone. And he drops Ruby on the floor. It's like he completely forgot about her.
Because at that moment, he saw his life flashing.
Yes.
He knew he could be dead.
Yes, it's true. And so the rest of the episode has Sid taking them to an underground part of Ord Mantell, and it felt very Lord of the Rings again. I really love that, the fact that you have these Lord of the Rings influences, because there was a weekend where my brother and I marathoned the extended editions.
Oh, yeah.
We ended up finishing like at 11 o'clock at night. And it was funny how this week we, you know, I get this episode and I felt like I was back in the Mines of Moria. Because the moment Wrecker dropped that flashlight and you heard the screeches, it reminded me of Pippin touching that dead body and it falling into the well.
Yeah.
And then I really, like I said, in that moment to Wrecker, full of a took. Throw in yourself next time and rid us of your stupidity. So that was funny, Wrecker being the Pippin in that moment. And then there was also, to me, there were also Harry Potter vibes because of the cart. It reminded me of Gringotts.
Gringotts, yeah. You know, one thing that I kept thinking about, you know that fissure in the mountain that we see? That
yes.
We know where these creatures,
the creatures come out of. Yeah.
You know where we start in that hole?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what does that map look like? Because don't we start like in the city? How the hell did we go from the city to the mountain back to the city?
That is a good point.
Like, I kept thinking, like, how?
Because of the fact that they're mines. Usually mines are out. So you have to take people who live in the city, get them out to the mines, and then get them back home. So it makes sense to me that they were out there and they had to make this wild
circle,
yeah.
Like going from the city
right.
to the mountain, back to the city somewhere else.
It actually reminds me of The Emperor's New Groove, where Kronk pulls down a map and it has like a whole bunch of lines
yeah.
of their journey. And he's
yes.
like, by all accounts, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, it could be like
yeah.
that. And then the creatures that we were just talking about, they're tarot creatures. And I found that in that wording from tech very interesting because it automatically brings up dinosaurs in my head.
Yeah.
And they're called Urlings. I didn't take a chance to see what, you know, if there was any reference to that anywhere else, but I thought those were interesting creatures. I wish they were a bit slower so I could see what they really looked like, but they were just like swarming everywhere and I just didn't have a chance to like pause and take a look at one. Although the green goo that came out of it was this pretty nasty.
Yeah, and the squiggly one that got cut in half or something.
Oh, yeah, that was disturbing. That,
yeah, like, I don't want to see it.
In that moment, I thought when they were panning down to the bottom of that, I really thought that there had been an opening and that they were going to fly out of there, but that's not what it was at all.
Oh, yeah.
So going into the final part of the episode, I love how when the Pikes come out of Sid's office and they, you know, they request or demand that Omega stay behind while they go look for the spice. I love how the Bad Batch take out their weapons.
All at once. They didn't even have to think or look at each other or anything. It was
right.
like an automatic reaction.
They were like, nope, no, this is not happening. And then as they're leaving, they have no choice but to leave Omega. And as they're leaving to go to their ship, I love how Echo has this expression behind Sid as she's talking. And he's mad and he like shakes his head. And it's very minor. You miss it if you're not paying attention to him. But what I really love about it is that he clearly has his opinions about Sid. We heard them in Battle Scars where he told Hunter, we're not mercenaries,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're soldiers. And I love that that's coming through a little bit through his expression, but I do wish that he was talking more often, as often as he was talking in that Battle Scars episode. So he's not voicing his opinion as much, and I really want him to lash out to someone and be like, this isn't what we should be doing.
or put Sid in her place when she says stupid things, because she can sometimes say some things like, come on.
or I think he's also annoyed at the fact that she withholds a lot of things. And that's what he mentioned at the very beginning of the episode, was that I wish, you know, Sid should have told us about the Gundarks that were in that mission that they went on. And here she is just telling them last minute that they were going to have some sort of creature in there and not to make any noise. So,
but not explaining anything. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like, come on. Give some more.
And it must be really hard coming from his background as a soldier, where things are fully laid out. And yeah, there are unexpected, unknown things, but they go in with as much information as they can.
Yeah.
And so I love how Sid said, I got the kid into this and I'll get her out. And to me, it just shows that she's not truly an awful person. Like, she obviously looks out for herself, but she also has a little bit of a heart for those who do things for her, who are loyal to her.
And she demonstrates loyalty.
Yes, yeah. And I feel for that reason, I think that Omega's the reason Sid won't really out them. I think whenever she says, oh, I know your secrets and whatnot, I think that's more of a bluff than anything else. So because of Omega, I think they're okay and that Sid isn't. And I think when it comes down to it, like if Crosshair were to show up and the Bad Batch were gone and they were inquiring Sid, where are they? I think she would not say a word and she would probably die and she'd be, you know what? That's fine.
And I think that she wouldn't like Crosshair much.
No. Crosshair, she'd probably call him something like,
I don't know what she will call him.
Yeah, something that would point out his
Something that is very insignificant, like toothpick.
Oh, yeah, or just to, like, poke at the fact that he doesn't have any, at least, like, personality to her, would be like calling him Chuckles, even though he doesn't chuckle. Or do anything. like calling him the opposite of what he is.
and she will definitely not like him.
No.
And it will be like the icing on the cake.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to tell you. And even worse, not just because of the kid, but with the fact that I don't like you.
You're right.
You know?
And that's another thing. Like, I don't expect the Bad Batch to have a very deep relationship with Sid, but I wish that they were in a place where they could talk about certain things, like talk to her about Crosshair not being with them, and then her having an idea of what Crosshair, of who Crosshair is, and then coming to the point where she meets Crosshair, if that were to happen, and then saying, I know what they were talking about. And so, I wish that they had that kind of relationship with Sid. But it is what it is. At this point. And I love how Wrecker was freaking out when the bugs came out.
But
only do you have him in Heights, but you also have him freaking out with the bugs.
First, he's in a high, in a thing hanging. So that is stressful.
Yeah.
And then here comes all these creatures that can make me drop from here.
It was just so funny to see the comparison between him and Sid, and how Sid was completely
calm.
And then you have Crosshair. You have Wrecker, who's like, Yeah. That was so funny. And then the device Tech was working on, and then he throws into the chasm below. I love how that burst of light was very Gandalf to me. I love how that was very similar to, like, when he summons light from his staff, and how he used it specifically in The Return of the King, when he used it to ward the Nazgul away.
You shall not pass.
it was very reminiscent of that. And then Omega and Sid both defending Roland.
Yeah.
when the Pikes had him on that crate. And I thought, oh God, how is this going to go? I love how Omega asks him right after the Pikes do their thing and they leave. I love how she asks him, are you okay?
Yeah.
It was just a sweet moment.
And that right there is sort of like the culmination of that relationship where you know that if he comes back, he's going to be an ally. He's going to be an asset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's what I like to think so, yeah. And I wonder, again, how his mother is going to react to what happened. Like, is she going to be like, oh, no, my baby? Or, you know what? This is what you get for messing up. So I'm very curious about Issa Durant now. And I love that it's his mother who is the crime boss.
Yeah.
And that, you know, traditionally the father who is the head honcho of what's going on. So that was really cool that they, in this show, because of the fact that the Bad Batch are old men, I love how they find ways to incorporate women into the story. And I love, again, how Hunter asks Omega, why did you stick up for him after what he did? And you know what? When you think about it, the Bad Batch, they're just as young as Omega. In how long they've been on in the galaxy. They're only like 13, 14, 15.
Yeah.
Obviously, they look much older, but that's really what it boils down to. So you have a kid asking another kid, why did you do this?
Yeah, and it all boils down to their behavior and whatever you think they're capable of is based on their experiences as soldiers. That's all they know.
Mm-hmm.
It's soldiering, you know, following orders, nothing more. It's not about thinking or questioning. It's just doing what a soldier is supposed to do. But then going back to what you just mentioned, the fact that on top of that, they're kids, right? Mentally, emotionally speaking.
Yeah.
They're children. They're still developing.
Yeah.
You know, and here's Omega, which is basically the opposite. Omega has grown differently and has time to
process things
and develop that emotional side.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he's paying attention.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. This reminded me a lot of, because of the fact that I had marathoned the Lord of the Rings movies, there was a moment in The Return of the King when everyone's celebrating after Helm's Deep, when Gandalf and Aragorn are talking about Frodo, and Aragorn tells Gandalf, what does your heart tell you? And the way that he's supposed to come across saying that is that he's supposed to be fatherly to Gandalf, who is obviously much older than him. And Gandalf was supposed to come across as very young in that moment, in, you know, realizing that, you know, he's okay, that Frodo's okay. Seeing that and then having seen this scene, it's like you have Omega, who is coming across more as, you know, not the adult, but someone who is a bit more experienced in this part. And then Hunter coming across as more as the child.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wanting to know why they did it this certain way. And she says maybe he's not all that bad because of what, you know, Ruby, and the fact that Ruby likes him.
Yeah, yeah. I love how she took that from Roland.
Right. Yeah. And I didn't think about that, the fact that she had taken or borrowed those words from him. But I do wish that her response was a bit more, like if she had said, you know, sometimes people do things because they have to, and other times people do things because they feel it's right. Like, I feel like that would have touched, like that first part of what I just said would have touched on Roland, because he feels like he has to do something. And, you know, that second half of that would be Omega, because she feels like she has to do it because it's right. And, like, I feel like it should have been a little bit more deeper just to nail down what it is that was happening in this episode and nail it down for Hunter.
But then comes back to what you said, is two children.
Yes, it's two children.
And then it's as deep as both of them understand it to be.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
He's gonna be able to understand what she means, and she knows exactly what she's saying.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a give and take that is at the same level.
Yeah, I do like that.
This is like I always say, you can talk to children like you talk to adults. It's just you have to do it in their own terms.
Exactly.
In terms that they can understand.
Yeah, yeah. And so, of course, some people, I wasn't online much on Twitter, so I don't know how people reacted to this episode, but I highly believe that some people were like, what was the point of this episode? It was they call it a filler or whatnot. But to me, this episode pretty much solidified that Cid won't betray them, that Omega continues to challenge the Bad Batch and teach them things in ways that they didn't think that they would ever learn. And then making that connection, like you said, with Roland, and hopefully seeing that sort of like how we saw the Purrgil in season 2of Star Wars Rebels. And then we saw them in season 4 at a very critical moment.
Yeah.
So Roland could potentially be like the Purrgil to the Bad Batch. And so final thoughts, you know, I love how Tech says torches. Like,
yes.
It's very, very New Zealand. And I remember when I was there, you know, we had our torches, and I made sure to call it that because that's what they called it. And I didn't want to say flashlight and sound American. So
actually, I ever since that, I just prefer to say torch.
Yeah, torch is such a cooler name for it.
Yeah.
And then I love the part when Ruby sits on her lap. Like, I thought that was just so sweet. You think it's going to go to Roland, but no, it went to Omega. So did you have any other thoughts about the episode?
I really liked it. It was entertaining. It was revealing in some places where it had to be. And like you say, it solidifies relationships. It establishes points that later on we may see.
Right.
You know, connections that instead of asking ourselves later on, where did that came from? We know exactly where it came from.
Exactly. Yeah. And so what comes next? We have the episode War Mantle. And for the last 2 episodes, we actually don't have titles for those. They didn't release the titles when D23 usually posts them. And I checked and they didn't have anything for the last 2. And I thought, oh no, what are they going to be called?
Oh, yeah.
But the next one is called War Mantle. And we know that that's the initiative that they're taking to, you know, have more conscripted soldiers and weed out the clone troopers. And so I'm so curious. I'm happy finally that it's going to be about Crosshair because it's sorely needed. But I'm curious, what is it going to
exactly
touch on? Yeah. Exactly, yeah. And obviously Rampart is going to play a part in it. But we'll see who will take us. And that's it, pretty much. That's it for today's episode. It was pretty short, given that it was just a straightforward kind of a mission.
Yeah.
And we were able to, like, pick up on some of the things that we might see touched on later on. So that's it. And the next time you hear from us, we'll be talking about War Mantle. But before then, where can listeners find you, Mommy?
Listeners can find me at Twitter with the handle at Hubian214.
And listeners can find me on Twitter with the handle BlueJayGuys and Geeky Bubble with the handle at GeekyBubblePod.
And may the Force be with you.
Always.